Chatting it up once again with you Tuesday, June 25th, 2024, right here on Connecticut Today, where we welcomed, as usual, every Tuesday in the 5 o'clock hour, Yankee Institute blogger Megan Portfolio, this time around with her look at the possible implementation of ranked choice voting in Connecticut. State Senate Republican leader Steve Harding checked in about a controversy regarding pension benefits connected to the recent death of a Connecticut state trooper. Ranked choice voting, I've done a lot of segments on the program here over the past, 5 years I've been here. We've been talking about this for years. The late Oz Griebel, a multi-time guest on this show, was a big proponent of that. Some folks like Monty Frank carrying on his legacy in that. Some people love ranked choice voting. Some people hate it. Some people are like, eh, will it confuse people who are generally already confused? Talking about that, ranked choice voting, or really confusing voting. That's the title of the latest entry in the Hartford Portfolio, written by our next fabulous guest. Megan Portfolio is here. Ms. Portfolio, how are you?
Hey, good afternoon. I missed you last week.
Well, you know, sometimes about 2 or 3 weeks a year, I got to reset to 3:45 in the morning, but it's great to hear your voice again. So, you know, I've done a lot of segments on this, Megan, and sometimes I say, yeah, this ranked choice voting, this is a great idea. Then the day later, I say to myself, what are you talking about? This is a horrible idea. And then the day after that, I say, I don't know. But the governor here, as you pointed out in your piece, he is fulfilling a promise. He has a committee or a commission or a study group looking at this. What's going on here?
Yeah, a working group. He had made a campaign promise in, I think it was the last election, that he would look into it. So he's just, you know, following through with his word. So he announced that he was forming a working group, which Monty Frank is on. Tony Wong, Senator Tony Wong, is one of the chairs. Senator Kathy Austin is one of the chairs. So it's pretty balanced. I'm with you. Some days I'm for it, some days I'm against it. But it's the people that are pushing this was a little troubling to me, because just where they're getting, they're very organized and they've been around for years, and they're called Fair Vote. It's one word, and you know they get Soros money. So now I'm like,
oh boy, red light.
That goes against everything that I believe in and what I want for this country. So. But I'm still on the edge, because, I mean, there's people from both sides of the aisle that are for and against it. Cato Institute, they're a, you know, well-known think tank, libertarian think tank. They're for it. But then on Heritage Foundation, another conservative libertarian-type think tank, they're against it. And then you even have leftists that are for it, and then leftists are against it.
Yeah. So
it's funny, because it's Connecticut, so it's like, oh, this shiny new thing. Let's like focus over here. It's another state's doing it, because we love to do what other states do. And let's distract from the actual real like issues that we have right now with voting by like putting this out there and confusing everyone. It's like, oh, let's focus on this and we'll just ignore Bridgeport, because we still haven't resolved that issue.
Yeah, from 2019, never mind 2023. You know, Megan, the thing that kind of makes it interesting for me, and I guess now we can argue about turnout or whatever, but we're not really sure about that. But the thing, I'll tell you what I like and what I don't like. First, what I like is that, and I could see this being a plus, that if you know that people will be ranking people, candidates, you know, 1, 2, 3, and 4, or 1, 2, and 3, whatever. And if you're a candidate there that may not actually win on the initial vote, as was explained to me, and when I heard this, I said, yeah, that's kind of true. You can't be a real jerk. And I guess you could. But if you try to appeal to only one niche group of voters, it's going to hurt you. Whereas a lot of people would rank you last because they're voting for the other person, versus somebody who say, well, you know, I don't want to vote for him or her top. But, yeah, he'd be my second choice because I kind of agree with him on some things. So that, to me, Megan, is the most, to me anyway, the most persuasive argument I've heard, is you may have to appeal to more than one group of your constituents.
Yeah, and I think we would see a lot more candidates, actually. Like, there's a lot of lazy candidates out there.
Yeah.
I think you're going to see a lot more candidates. Like, you want this job, you're going to have to work for it. And that part I do like, because I'll tell you what, I've lived in Middletown for, I think, about, oh, God, time just flies when you're old, maybe 6 years, seven years.
Yeah.
I have seen one candidate, or no, I've seen two candidates, and they were those, like, trying to petition to get on the ballot mm-hmm. candidates. I have never seen any, and I have a Democrat in my household, so I have not seen any candidate in my neighborhood since I've lived here. As I'm begging for them to come to my door. I would love it.
Yeah. Yeah,
but and I think we would see more of that. And I think, you know, I mean, as what does Stephanie Thomas call the electorate, an undereducated electorate?
Yeah.
I think this could maybe help reverse some of that because the candidates are really forced to like tell people where they stand on things. So I think it could help make more educated voters because they'd be forced to come out and explain things. But then I go back to the communists and the socialists are all loving this because they're saying like, oh, this will be an easier way for us to appeal to people. So I don't like that. So I'm still on the fence about it. But it's not the most terrible thing.
No.
And what they're proposing or talking about anyway, they're not really proposing anything yet. They will at the end of their time together, the working group's time together. It would only really be for caucuses, conventions, and certain municipal elections. So this is not like the sky's not falling. It's not like it's going to be a sweeping every election going to be ranked choice voting because Attorney General Tong had come out and said there's really no mechanism in our Constitution that would allow for that for state offices.
Yeah, and that's the part that I don't like because you know there are states, Megan, and I'm sure you researched this for your piece. They do it for their Senate. I mean, U.S. Senate members, every elected office in that state on down. So, I mean, come on. If we go with ranked choice voting, of course, it's not going to affect anybody in the governor's mansion. It's not going to affect any of the constitutional offices. And, Megan, you and I know for damn sure the majority Democrats in the state Senate, the state House, do you think they're going to vote for something that would actually, geez, I don't know, challenge them even more? I mean, can you imagine in some of the leadership positions if they had to fend off not just a Republican, but another Democrat or two Republicans, they're never going to approve a system, Megan, that's going to chip away at their own power. They're just never going to do it.
I mean, what I also like, Paul, is, well, so one of the things that, I mean, a lot of things aggravate me, as you can tell from our time together, but this fusion voting aggravates me to no end. I don't want to see the same of your own candidates. I cannot stand when I see a name on there two or three times.
Yeah.
So the ranked choice voting, get rid of that. So I don't have to see candidates names multiple times.
Yeah, the cross endorsements. Yeah, Megan, can you move around just a bit? You seem to be breaking up just a little.
Sorry.
No, that's all right. So let's take it back. You were breaking up a little bit. So you're talking about, you know, these fusion party lines and candidates where you have a Democrat, you know, who's also on the working party line and on the independent party or vice versa. That's what you're talking about, right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I'm sorry. Yeah.
No, it's
exactly.
All right. Go ahead. Go ahead.
I mean, like, if you're a party, have your own candidate. Like, don't this cross-endorsing and trading, you know, favors for support. I can't stand that nonsense.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, maybe this could help with the Bridgeport thing. I mean, are the ballot stuffers and the absentee ballot fraudsters going to spend all the time ranking all these people? I mean, they could basically rank their candidate out of the race. And back to Bridgeport, they still haven't. We had a senator, Senator Gaston from Bridgeport, who on the Senate floor literally said this is happening in other parts of the state.
Mm-hmm.
I have not heard, and I've written about this. I've talked about it on the air with you.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody has addressed this. Nobody will talk about it. There's no answers. What's he talking about? Like, I want to know where else is this happening? And I want our elections to get back to being something that we can trust and have faith in. And my vote counts and your vote counts. And even if you don't vote for my girl or guy, at least the votes count. So, I mean, I'd like to see them address these issues with these dopey ballot boxes. Why do we even need to have these ballot boxes? And, oh, but now they've got cameras.
Oh, that's a, yeah. Like somebody won't put on a hoodie and three masks and baggy jeans and park four blocks away. The cameras are going to make no difference. None.
Yeah, it's going to be like my treadmill. I'm going to hang my clothes on it. no one's going to be sitting there monitoring it. That doesn't give me any comfort that, oh, great, there's a camera, but who's watching it 24/7?
Yeah. Folks, check it out. The Hartford Portfolio, the blogger's Megan Portfolio, Ranked Choice Voting or Really Confusing Voting, RCV, either way. Megan, thanks, and we'll chat next week. Thank you.
Have a good week.
All right, thanks. Yeah, so there it is, folks. There is a bit of maybe not a controversy, but something that has been brought to light here by the tragic death in the line of duty of a late member of the Connecticut State Police Force regarding benefits for his survivors and for his young children. It's getting a lot of play in the news, and here to explain what will maybe have to be changed now by the General Assembly in the next session is Republican State Senate Head Steve Harding joining us. Steve, good afternoon, sir. How are you?
Oh, good afternoon. It's good to be on with you. Thank you for having me.
Thanks, Steve. Always good to hear from you. And, you were on News 8 last night, a couple of other outlets, talking about something that I guess is ingrained in state law, Steve. And explain it to my listeners here about why the late State Police Trooper First Class Aaron Pelletier, who was tragically killed a few weeks ago, why his family, his wife and kids, his survivors, technically cannot get state pension benefits from him.
Yeah, and the problem is that the way this was structured is that the trooper would have needed to have served 25 years or reached the age of 59 years old in order for the spouse to receive the benefit. And fortunately, Trooper Pelletier's life got cut far too short and had vested in the pension, but had only served 11 years at the time of his death and therefore didn't serve the 25. And this is obviously a complete oversight in the legislation or the law that was drafted to not consider those that die in the line of duty, those that were not able to complete their service because of the fact that they essentially sacrificed their lives in the line of service, to think that individual would not be able to pass on their benefit to their survivors is just, their surviving family is just extremely saddening and illogical, frankly. And we're going to do whatever we can to ensure that this is corrected.
Yeah, it seems to me, Stephen, I can understand because I know rules are rules here, but I was thinking, as maybe you did and people in both caucuses, they're like, it's weird, Stephen, and we don't know what people were thinking years and years and years ago when these rules were set down. But, you know, I find it maybe amazing or surprising, but nobody, and we don't know what was said in session, but that anybody said, hey, what if a state trooper is killed, God forbid, which does happen rarely, but it does in the line of duty. I'm like you are. I'm surprised it was never, I guess, Steve, brought up.
Yeah, and we're still looking into the complexity of what exactly is the guiding doctrine here, and I believe it's essentially the collectively bargained agreement that the union came to with the state. That kind of is driving the rules and the guidelines surrounding surviving spouses. And so I would hope it was nothing more than an oversight. And I truly believe that that's what it is. But nevertheless, I mean, we have to do whatever is necessary to address the oversight, because clearly any logical person with a heart and with a brain would see this situation and say, obviously, this is not how this system should operate. And if we're going to make an exception to how, certain rules are guiding us, obviously that exception should be made in circumstances such as Trooper Pelletier's, where, he or even another trooper, God forbid, dies in the line of duty, that their family should be receiving all the benefits that they've certainly well deserved in terms of what their spouse did for their state.
Yeah, or Steve, for that matter, I'm just sitting here kind of thinking out loud here, and I'm sure this will be brought up when you guys and gals get together and talk about this, whether it's next session or whatever. But what about, say, if a member, a good union member in good standing of a state road crew, for perhaps with all the crazies on the road today. What if, and we've had that. We have a memorial ride to DOT workers who have been killed because people can't slow down. I mean, might it cover them? Who knows?
And so I think that, that's where I was saying that there's a complexity to this, is we have to pinpoint exactly whether it's collectively bargained agreement, whether it's legislation, what is guiding this, and what specifically has to be changed to make this work. And I think it needs to be an overall conversation, to your point, in that should we also be considering other workers who unfortunately may lose their life in the line of duty to the state, as you mentioned. You know, there have been, unfortunately, DOT workers, to your point, that have lost their lives. It certainly wouldn't be fair to them and their families if they didn't reach a certain amount of years of service, or they weren't a certain age, that spouse that's left after their death did not receive the benefits they would have otherwise received if they simply had just been able to live.
Steve, what in the couple of minutes we have left, what are your thoughts? What can we expect to see? Anything of demonstrative weight in the special session that's coming up? Have you guys and gals settled on when it's going to be and what's going to be taken up, if anything?
Yeah, so it will be tomorrow, and that's definitive. There's still some minor loose ends in terms of what exactly the final product may be that we're going to be voting on. But, I mean, it's mostly standardized technical changes, nothing of extreme substance or nothing overtly really political. It seems like it's mostly standard changes. Now, there might be some philosophical differences on how we view some aspects of the changes, but nothing too significant for the most part. I think it's going to be just technical changes that we should have fixed, frankly, before we concluded last session and just ran out of time.
Well, Steve, if you can do me a favor, I want you guys and gals on both sides of the aisle tomorrow, take a quick vote, and even though it's special session, get the governor to go with it, quadruple the fines for distracted driving, will you? I mean,
I heard your commentary earlier. It is dangerous.
Oh, my God. I'm looking over, and somebody's scrolling the phone, and somebody's drifting into my lane. So do that. Call it the Paul Pacelli Has Had Enough Act. Just do it by acclamation and, I don't know, three or four times for the fines. What do you say? Good idea?
Well, I say whatever we can do to promote public safety on our roadways, we have to make a constructive effort to do so.
Right.
Paul, to your point, let's do something about it.
Steve, thanks, my friend. Take care. Have a good time tomorrow, and we'll be in touch. Thanks.
Thank you very much.
Appreciate it. Bye-bye. Yeah, Steve Harding there, State Senate Republican leader.